This episode of The Scottish State is again brought to you by the Roundtable 1320s Digital Rally. This is part four, and Diane's guests are Mike Fenwick and Dave Llewellyn.
Good afternoon, Mr. Llewellyn.
Good afternoon, Mr. Fenwick.
I understand you've had a kind of tranquil, not very exciting day.
I'm just back in the Northern Leith, spending most of the day as part of the convoy that went down to Berwick to the border, as seemingly everybody on Facebook knows about already. But basically, I got contacted 2 days ago by Ian McNeil, who's regularly does Bridges for Indy, to say, look, we're not quite sure, but if Nicola gets rid of the 5 mile limit tomorrow, how about we go down to the border and do some stuff down there? I says, aye, I'm in. Now, he'd been talking to other people about this and people for the Freedom Convoy. Basically, they've been sorting us out over the last couple of days. But until this morning, we didn't actually know if we were going to be doing it. So everything was being planned, and there was loads of folk we didn't get a hold of because we were all inviting people that we know ourselves, and nobody knew who'd invited anybody else. So basically, we ended up with 8 cars and a Yes bike, plus Ian's trailer. So we met up at Newbridge this morning, left here at 11 o'clock, and drove down to the border.
With a growing number of Yes supporters beginning to follow you as you did your live streams.
It was nuts. I mean, basically, when you sit and watch Gordon Ross or something like that, he gets maybe 300, maximum 400 live viewers a time. And that's the biggest thing that you see on a live, as it was going up and saying, oh, we're starting to reach Gordon Ross material. And then we just shot away past, and it was like, it got up to 1,200 live, and it was going into fantasy territory. By that time, the rain started on my phone, I had to stop it. And that video had 2,500 live views, it had 80,000 views. Scotland, the Yes movement has obviously realised that something was going on. I mean, nobody's been able to do anything at all this year. We've done stuff, obviously, digitally and things like that. But it was the first time that we'd actually got together for some real skullduggery. And what better way to do it than in no man's land between the Scottish and English border that Boris says didn't exist.
Who was with you on the journey?
Me, Ian McNeil, Pat Lee, Cliff Serby, Lot Taylor.
And one very famous dog.
Jane was there as well with Sheldon.
Sheldon was there.
It was absolutely mental. There was a freelance photographer turned up about an hour in who had gone down to Berwick to do a thingy about the pubs being open down there. He'd done his thing down there, he was coming back up and then he saw us. Bugger the pubs in Berwick. He says, this is a much better story. So he sat and got loads and loads of photographs with them standing with their hazmat suits on with a flag in front of the big banner.
It's absolutely fantastic. You're all heroes. There's a personal risk involved in that. That's not to be ignored.
We were a wee bit careful. I mean, like, Cliff normally takes his kids with him. He didn't take the kids with this time, just in case. Because it is a serious political issue at the minute, which is why we did it. I mean, at the end of the day, Boris said there's no border. Nicola says, well, if she goes and starts doing her policies in Newcastle. So we thought, well, at the end of the day, if we go down to no man's land, and basically we were getting the numbers of caravans and mobile homes that were going, and posting them. If you just want to risk bringing a virus into Scotland.
Without getting into too serious things, seriously, on behalf of anyone who is a Yes supporter in Scotland, thank every single one of you. Absolutely brilliant for what you did.
It was great fun. When you try to organise something, you can never actually see how it's going to go. And then sometimes you just catch a wave, and God, did we catch one today. As I say, those numbers, and it's just, I think every yeser in the country knows what we're doing. And 99% of them are behind us, and the other 1% are.
It's also very important, not just from a political point of view, but just literally from a medical point of view. I mean, the latest reports are that the R number in various parts of England has gone above 1.
Yeah, London, I saw that this morning.
You know, and you sit down and say, wait a minute, you know, Boris Johnson, what on earth are you doing encouraging people to start going out and start drinking? The police can't cope with people having out-of-lockdown street demonstrations. And the fact that you have highlighted it, Dave, for that reason alone, we've got a virus and we've got to try and get it stopped.
If we wanted to have an independence thing, we had one on a bridge and we've all done it. Due to the particular sensitivity with the virus situation and the fact that Prime Minister of the UK is saying that there's no border, basically encouraging people to fire over it, it might not make a difference. But if somebody takes a photograph of that the day, we didn't know it was going to go mental at the time. It is possible There are two different laws that allow it to be done if there's a political will, and I believe that Nicola Sturgeon has been pushed in that direction by the complete intransigence of the Tory government. It's utterly nonsense what they're doing. Not so much what we did today, but the response to what we did is going to cause a lot of pressure on people.
For all the right reasons, Dave. No one wants this virus to spread, and people can pass saying it doesn't affect us, they're in the caravan and we'll just go to wherever we want to go. We've all in Scotland, I think across the board, adhered to the advice we've been given. Today was the first day I put on a mask all day as I went out. That is all part of what we're trying to do. It's very simply keep people healthy and not have them die off. Listen, can I just give you a warning, my friend?
Yeah.
I've been promising everyone on everything that there's a song that you sing that's going to appear sometime in this. We've got the good people at the Round Table 1320 set up to play this. I've just got to give them the nod when that happens. So that'll keep everyone interested. I want that to be a teaser while you and I maybe discuss why we're doing the 12 heats. I want to read you something. I'm going to pull it up on my screen. Just bear with me a wee second. This was a response to one of the polls we did. It comes from a lady called Pamela Murray. I think there are more than simply A and B. She then goes on to think, I used to think that all we were waiting on was evidence of a stable majority of pro-ND voters. But now I realise it's not as clear-cut as that, given how even the new digital covenant is. Are we, in fact, in the early stages of developing our independent actuality? New people are coming forward. We do need more coherent views on how we go forward. Now, I read that very carefully because I think there's a truth in that.
Yep.
The general thinking was we'll be going for another referendum. And what we are trying to do is put on the table the different views that people are having in this now that we've got beyond just what we're calling plan A, if you like, which is we just go for another Section 30 referendum and just anticipate Boris says no. So we started with Chris McElhenney because he's bringing forward a suggestion which he wants to get into the SNP conference and see how that goes. Danger in that, from my point of view, is that Section 30 is involved. And I want to make this comment more broadly. When you and I are doing the interviews with different people, what we're both trying to do is remain fairly neutral, not completely neutral, and let the person who's got a plan put it before everyone for them to listen to. You and I know, other people don't know, that we have an invitation out to Pete Wishart, who has expressed entirely different views, I think, than people were expecting a wee while ago. I'd love to get Joanna Cherry on. I'd like to get Mike Russell on, all of whom have a part to play in where Scotland is going.
The independence movement are probably one of the most politically aware movements on the planet. We've had to deal so much with double speak from unionist parties in London, whether Tories or Labour, or Lib Dems when they were in coalition. At the end of the day, it's like we know when someone's spinning us a line. When Mark McNaught did his interview with Ian Blackford, Mark had come on and started talking about the covenant, and Ian just trotted out the same line that he would have did in Prime Minister's question time, and it's like, that was Assyrian, and it's like, okay, and you recognise it right away. You think, he shouldn't do that, he's one of ours. I think it's important that we have got as much information as possible rather than just party dogma or whatever, so that we can make our own minds up, because we're big enough to be able to take it and we're smart enough to be able to use it, which is not necessarily a good thing for politicians. And I'm not saying about anybody in particular, I'm talking about all of them, because at the end of the day, they've all got agendas that we don't have. I mean, we're obviously behind independence. As far as I'm concerned, I'll take it any way you can get it and support anything that is liable to work. The more choice you have, the better decisions you'll make.
One of the things that came out of the discussion with Chris McElhenney, not in the discussion itself, but in reaction to it, was the very strong views that are held on not going with a Section 30. Now, that wasn't the purpose of the actual programme, but it was the result of the programme. And that's what I think is important, because we then move on to whether Section 30 in its own, what we thought of maybe back in 2015, 2016. Plan A, if you want to call it. From my perspective at the moment, Plan A is diminishing in its importance, and there's other choices coming up. Now, you and I know, and I think we can advise people of this, that very, very recently, following two articles in the National, Jim Fairley, who's Farmers for Yes, has come up with other ideas on what should be doing. And again, that's a question of getting information out to people. You know that today I set up a page called The Twalheads. Yep. And the intention of that is very simply, I hope you and I have still to agree this, but my thinking is we take each of the programs and post them onto that page so that at any time, if someone says, well, Chris McElhenney has got a view, they can go to that video and see what that view was. And yep. as we go through the various things, can I jump for a second to the Yes groups that we had on? I want in particular, and you know why I'm doing it, to refer to Ali from Butterflies Rising.
Yeah.
Absolutely brilliant. However, she started saying, don't have a plan, have a project, and have a timescale to that project. So say what it is you're trying to do and say when you're going to achieve it. That, to me, is also part of what you and I are doing with these programs. For me, it's a personal opinion, the decisions that the Yes movement must be able to see that have been taken by the Yes movement itself must be evidenced by the end of this year. If we're talking about next year's elections, if we're talking about what happens at that time, everything has got to be narrowed down in some way. If it's possible to achieve it, it's going to be difficult. But I'm hoping what we do fits in with what Ali was talking about, as we sit down and say, right, by the end of this year, we've looked at Plan A, Plan B, Plan C, Plan D, Plan E, as many plans are out there. We've looked at how the indie parties, ISP and Alliance, are projecting themselves. Quick comment on that, Dave. It's quite peculiar. I took part in the original steering group for the Alliance. Actually argued for the name and achieved the name Alliance for Independence. Then over problems I had with how they were wanting to take things forward, they're resolving them. But I saw at the time I was just going to end up causing trouble if I stayed on the steering group. Here are you, 2 months later, organising for the Alliance, right? You've got your local community started in that. That is another part of what I think, not necessarily for the Alliance, but just generally, that it begins to focus people in on another option, which is how are these independent parties going to play a part in it? Chris McElhenney, for me, during the whole interview, raised one very particular point, which is, if there is a common way of taking forward the ideas for independence, a common wording, I asked Pat Lee to confirm for me whether it was something he would object to, is if to achieve independence, all the political parties, despite the differences on domestic policy, say between SNP and Greens, if they have in their manifesto a commonly worded statement as to how they wish to achieve independence for us, that is very, very important.
I agree. I mean, obviously, the SNP are by far the largest party, and I think they should obviously take the lead as far as that's concerned. And the other parties, if they want to have any chance of using a popular vote in a Scottish election, the wording on independence has to be exactly the same for every single party, every single independent that's, no matter who, the wording on independence, if it's exactly the same for all of them, then each vote that's made for any of them will count for independence. And it may come down to a popular vote. And as I say, if you get a popular vote, that is your plebiscite. It's as legal as a referendum to declare independence. And it's not UDI. You'll basically be declaring independence, revoking the union or whatever it is. You'll be doing that on the basis of a legal plebiscite that will be internationally recognisable. As I say, I do have reservations about whether you can do a majority of seats, in spite of the fact that it was actually Westminster that set up the voting system, as they did for the one in Ireland 100 years ago, and Ireland are still using it to this day.
You prefer the idea of the number of votes cast?
If you're using it as a plebiscite, the way I would go is, if you get a maximum number of the seats, you should be holding an advisory referendum, and if you win that advisory referendum, you should call it. If you get a majority in the popular vote, like the last couple of polls have said that would happen, then basically you can declare, because there's your plebiscite, and there's not a single country in the world could say that you don't have a majority.
Right. I'm not going to drag you much further into this serious thing. I'm going to ask the people at the round table to start getting your song ready. I've told everyone they can't miss this, and I'll tell you folks, this is unbelievable. It's short, but it's pointed.
It's the shortest song I've ever written.
Your section 30 up your arse. You can stick your section 30 up your arse. You can stick your section 30 up where it's dark and dirty. You can stick your section 30 up your arse.
We're now live again, so I want to welcome Diane Matheson to join us for the rest of the chat. Diane, welcome.
Thanks. Thanks, Mike. Hey, Dave. How are you guys today?
Doing fine.
Did you have an eventful day, did you, Dave? Out and about?
No, I've just been sitting here waiting on this start my day.
I got a bit of a surprise this morning, I'd have to say.
Did you?
Yes, I didn't know anything about that. So, yeah, that was awesome.
Neither did anybody, as I say. We were worried the police found out before we went and stopped it. The last time I mentioned something about Berwick, I got a phone call 4 hours later for a policeman on a number that nobody had. It was kept very, very hush-hush. But it was amazing.
Yeah, no, it looked awesome. Next time, invite me, though. Invite me. I like all that sort of stuff.
But we knew you were going to be busy with this.
I had advance notice of it, but on the basis we were meant to be doing a show later on, I stayed at home. But the main thing to keep it secret, a lot of people, Diane, wanted to go on that and said, you know, why couldn't you? Answer was, if you give advance notice of a thing, specifically that thing, you're going to get someone blocking off the lay-by so that no one can actually do what you're planning to do. So yeah, it had to be kept 100% secret. Can I say to you that I was very impressed with your discussion, firstly, with Ruth Watson. Incredible lady, knows exactly what she's doing. Yeah, and yeah, at some stage, I know Dave and I are going to maybe invite Ruth back on to have a further discussion on it. Maybe not for a wee while, but there's a lot going on and Ruth's playing a part in that. But I was particularly impressed with your discussion with David Younger. He started touching on things that I have opinions on. Very knowledgeable guy.
Yeah, it was fascinating, actually, because although something that I knew bits about, it wasn't, neither of those two topics were things that I knew a lot about. So hearing much more about the Keep Scotland the Brand got me actually interested in how we could roll that out within our own local communities and start speaking to retailers and things about it. And it was interesting to hear that essentially it's our campaign. So it was good to put it out there so that we could let people know that it's actually us that need to take it up and it's us that need to carry that campaign if we're to have any success with it. You know, Ruth, while she spearheads it, it's meant to be for the grassroots. So it was good to get all the information out there about it and it was nice for me to learn. But the UBI conversation with David was fascinating, really fascinating. I don't know if you're aware, my kind of career has been around finance and particularly public sector finance, and now I work in the third sector. So I have a lot of knowledge within finance, but not so much within like the UBI policy area or so much on the Yes Economy things work that you've been doing yourself. So to interview David, we actually set to do that interview one night, and then with the volume of information that came out of it, I actually said, I think we're going to need to consider how we frame this because it really is a huge topic and it's much more complex than I think most people realise initially. There's much more to it and there's much more out with UBI that you need to consider in order to implement a policy like that. It's like almost like UBI would be part of a solution, but we'd have to consider a whole host of other things to go along with it. And that's not something that I realised initially. So that was a huge learning experience for me. And now I'm like, ooh.
It's where the Assembly will play its part
as part of the Covenant.
I always use a phrase frequently called follow the money. And it's not the fact that you're giving someone a universal basic income. It's where the income actually has to be spent. Are you happy it goes to a private landlord who now knows that it's a perfectly secure income for him to take out a loan on to buy another property to rent out to more people who are getting the universe? Or should we be looking at it and saying, well, is a job guarantee a better way of going? I'm not suggesting that I have finalised my views on this, very far from it. But I do worry about certain things when you follow the money and just say, where is that going? There's maybe alternative ways of thinking that through. And I think that has to be done. But it was a good discussion you had with David.
Yeah, no, it was. It was fascinating and actually made me want to go and more learn more about UBI, but not just about UBI, to tie it into the economy as a whole. And I really enjoyed the, and I suppose in a sort of personal basis in recent years, I've moved kind of how I work and what I do. So I was always predominantly finance focused, but I found it quite boring. But how do you get out of a job when that's your income? And you have to pay your mortgage and the bills and put fuel in the car. How do you change your career if you've got nothing to fall back on? I was lucky enough that I managed to work my way through that to change slightly what I do. And I now have more project-based work. But most people aren't that lucky. And so they can't go and succeed. And I think, especially at our age, I think when you are approaching maybe around about the 40 mark, you tend to want more fulfillment from your work. You know, you almost change from that career driven to, I'd like to do something that I'd be fulfilled with. I've got another 25 years at least to work in my life. Why can't I do something that fulfills me? But you can't make that change because of your financial circumstances. So it does start to question, do we do things wrong?
The way the pension situation is going, if you happen to be 40 thinking you're going to have another 25 years, it's beginning to stretch out. You've maybe got another 40 years before you get your pension.
Right. Yeah, well, that's it.
Can I drag you into another thing that came up on the discussion with the Yes groups? Dave and I haven't really explored it. Dave is quite frequently my source of knowledge for what's going on in the background. Barbara from Yes Elgin mentioned her worries over Michael Gove, and I only then did a wee bit of research to find out what she was worried about. But apparently he set up a pro-union Keep It All Together committee with a number of other ministers, and they have 20 staff working for them. Did you know about that, Dave?
I knew he was up to, so I didn't know about the 20 staff, but I didn't know that he was putting this sort of, it's a little civil service think tank kind of government financed Hoorah Henry Club.
It's part of the government's regime, and the whole idea is to find every single way they can to strengthen the union. Wales, Northern Ireland and Scotland. And that's what was worrying. I think that's what was worrying Barbara. It's now worrying me, because that's the enemy we're going to have to fight. And we're sending our tax money down to help support it.
I would stop that instantly. I think basically we could stop sending an awful lot of tax down south right away. And there are ways of doing that legally. But of course, once again, you need a political will.
One of the things that is central to everything, no matter what the plan is, it tends to concentrate on there at some stage being a reference. Way back last year, with the help of David McGowan from Unchained Media, I did a series of videos, and one of them in specific terms deals with referendums and the Referendum Scotland Act, which was put through the Parliament. Diane, I don't think you'll have seen this video, and I'm going to ask the people at the round table. Dave and I won't be able to watch it because we're on the Zoom thing, but I think you've got a device beside you which would allow you to watch it. It eventually leads to a petition that I've got in the Parliament, but I'd like you to watch the video and then ask your personal reaction to what I'm trying to suggest in it. And if the round table can play that video for everyone to watch, we'll come back to it and go live once it's finished.
In the correspondence on the blog that I had with Peter Bell, I asked a series of questions. One was, how many people do you think have read the original act that's covered the first referendum in 2014? It's produced in 2013. It's 164 pages of small legal print. Very few people in the Yes movement, and I'm not accusing anyone of anything, I've actually gone through that. When I was 17, I was taught to read small print. It's a habit of mine now. I read small print. But when you read that small print, I'm going to come on to this in a second. Oh, there's a flaw in it of some kind. That's a copy of the referendum bill, an extract from it, that's currently going through the Scottish Parliament. Now remember, what happened was that the First Minister, Nicola Sturgeon, said she wanted to go down the path of a Section 30 request and a referendums bill. Now, that referendums bill that's going through isn't specific to an independence referendum. It encompasses any referendum. I don't think that the First Minister wrote the details in that. I think it will have been the civil service. Nicola Sturgeon has called it the gold standard. So imagine you were a civil servant that was asked to produce the referendums bill. What would you instinctively do? In my opinion, you would go back to the Act in 2013 for the 2014. And to a large extent, you would copy and paste, because that was the gold standard. Remember in the previous clip I talked about the Electoral Commission needing 12 weeks to consider a question? I want to read you something in Clause 39 in the current referendums bill that's going through Parliament. I'll read you the whole lot. Says restriction on legal challenge to a referendum result. No court may entertain any proceedings for questioning the number of ballot papers counted or votes cast as certified by a counting officer or by the chief counting officer unless the proceedings are brought by way of a petition for judicial review. The petition is lodged before the end of the permitted period. In subsection 1b, the permitted period means the period of 6 weeks, beginning with the day on which the officer in question makes the certification as to the number of ballot papers counted. 6 weeks, folks. Now, I mentioned much earlier on, remember how much was handed and given to Alex Salmond as part of his judicial review? £500,000. So let's say, after the next referendum, someone or groups of people across Scotland have seen something that they think was wrong. Maybe it was the number of postal votes. Maybe it was how they were counted. Maybe, like the EU referendum, there's a huge number just haven't been returned. Maybe it's the scale of the number of postal votes, all dealt with in earlier clips. Maybe you have to raise £500,000, hire a QC, and get that all into the Court of Session within a period of 6 weeks. Not 12 weeks to discuss a question and decide on it, 6 weeks. That, to me, is fundamentally wrong. The statute of limitations, which normally applies to anyone's complaint about something, is 6 years. We need to consider, as a Yes movement, asking our members of the Scottish Parliament whether they think any problem arising can be dealt with in 6 weeks. Maybe we've got to start considering individual discussions with our MSPs. Maybe we've got to discuss a petition going into the Scottish Parliament. Maybe, like everything I've tried to raise through all these clips, is there are questions to be raised. Not speculative. Everything I've done is based on hard documentary evidence. And I'm inviting other people to take part in all of this discussion. Whoever they are, whatever their views, not because I'm right, but because the questions need to be asked. Thank you for watching all of these clips. I'm grateful. I hope I haven't bored you to tears. It's done for the Yes movement, because as Graham Brown's song says, this time we will win. Sir Alba.
I 100% agree with what you just said. What can you do in 6 weeks? Nothing. That seems really inappropriate, actually. I didn't know anything about that, but 6 weeks is... No, yeah, that conversation needs to be had and that needs to be changed.
That was done last November. And in the course of the Referendum Scotland Bill going through Parliament, it was a Labour MSP that said 6 weeks seems awful short. And Michael Russell said, maybe it is. We'll make it 8 weeks. But unbelievable. Now, it's not just the weeks that are too short. It's the amount of money that you might have to raise to take an action through the court of session. What I've done since then, at the end of the video, I said, maybe you need to speak to your MSP. Now, remember, this was before it became an act that I was saying this. And then I said, maybe we need a petition. So I deliberately, because nothing was happening to seem to amend that as it went through the parliament, I put a petition in. Now, it started, I lodged it last November. The clerks for the committee, who are brilliant, came back to me and said, we need to maybe tweak that a wee bit, or do you want all of the background of the videos? There was a whole series of videos I did about how you can manipulate voting systems, etc. It takes you into back into the blockchain, if you like. So they then said, right, that's it, ready to go. So it goes open for anyone to comment on it. I didn't push it at all because I saw a time for this to become more public, which is why I wanted it done today. Then it was officially lodged. You get it open and then lodged, and it was lodged in March. The petitions committee take things in a series. So you just watch your petition slowly come up to the top of the series. If something is absolutely critical, like it would be if the petitions committee had one saying, we're actually quite worried there's a virus coming called COVID. You'll need to wait until we get to that petition. That strikes me as kind of funnily wrong. But anyway,
yes.
It got to near the top and the parliament recessed. So it's only going to come into vogue and it back into play, probably back in September when they come back. But here is the critical part of this. What the committee did, or the committee clerks did, is they sent it to the body in the parliament, which is called SPICE, the place where all the MSPs get their information, you know, where they will do detailed research. It's very similar to what goes on in the UK Parliament, where you'll get briefings given out to the MSPs, because not every MSP or MP will know enough about something. So SPICE did a report. And if you go to the petitions website on the Scottish Parliament, you'll see what SPICE said. They basically followed through everything I was saying. We need to get this watertight. And the final paragraph is, the Parliament has to adhere to the Human Rights Act. And if legislation goes through which is in breach of the Human Rights Act, such as right to a fair trial, the whole act can be struck down. I.e., if we're going to have a referendum, whether it's independence or whether it's we should stop the trams running in Edinburgh, whatever the referendum is, we've got an act at the moment, which I believe, because I was trained to read small print, and this is section 39 of a 160-odd page document. I read it and I said, that's wrong. There's an easier way of dealing with this. And just to, you'll know yourself if you follow Facebook pages, a lot of people will mention iDocs and say, that's a Tory minister that's a director of that, and they're in charge of counting. In one of the videos, I discount iDocs. I think there's bigger risks with this. But if you go through all the videos I did, you end up in the conclusion of saying, we can be extremely naive in Scotland. And even where ministers are doing the right thing, like setting up a referendums act, as I said in that video, what I think happened, either deliberately or not, is they copied from the original inverted commas gold standard. That's where I think the danger is, because it's not so much also the fact that it impoverishes who we are as yes if we see something. It also allows the unionists, because they're very clever at times, if they know that's there, and it was one of the dangers I had in posting what I've done and doing the petition, I think the unionists to have a referendum Scotland, that's fine. But when you win, we're just going to say it's got to be struck down because the act was wrong. In what my opinion the Parliament should have done is set up an ombudsman service. I'm used to dealing with financial ombudsmen. I've spent a good part of my life dealing with them. When something is wrong, how do you appeal it? I've given help to people to go through the ombudsman system. If someone said, look, I think iDocs was manipulating something, an ombudsman say, right, give me the evidence for that. And if it's just speculation, no hard evidence, the Ombudsman could get rid of it. That's exactly what happens with financial complaints. If you've got the evidence, the Ombudsman will make basically an impartial, it's meant to be, decision. Martin Keating's at the moment, with his Ombudsman times the health position he's in, would completely disagree with me, but I've got a lot of experience of them. If, however, evidence was given to the Ombudsman, which the Ombudsman said, that is factually correct, something went badly wrong here, without expense, without having to spend £500,000 and only have 8 weeks to do it in, the Ombudsman could declare it as being a valid point. That can go back to the Parliament, and the Parliament can decide whether or not something went wrong and do something about it. Why Mike Russell and taking that through, why the civil servants weren't alive to the fact there are ombudsmans for all sorts of complaints in civil society. That's the way they should have done, should have gone, in my opinion. If I'm ever called to give evidence to the Petitions Committee, that suggestion, that is what I'll be putting forward. The petition physically says is, I'm calling on Parliament to re-look at the situation, look at what Spice have said, and if they think they're absolutely correct and it's watertight, I'll stop arguing. If they think everyone's got £500,000 and they can provide all the evidence in 8 weeks, I want to know who they've identified in the Yes community that's actually that person.
Basically, that on the 31st of December this year, the Human Rights Act will fall. So basically, at the end of the day, after the 1st of January, like, the referendums bill will be valid. It's only if the referendum is called before the end of this year that will actually take effect.
No, it's whether or not the Parliament amend Section 39 of the existing Act to remove what they put in at the moment and replace it with a better wording. In the majority of cases, if you have a complaint about something, you bought the wrong goods, you've been on holiday and you're not happy with what happened, you have a statute of limitations in which you can raise a complaint. There's no statute of limitations other than the Referendums Act, which says you've got to do it in 8 weeks.
Yeah, but my point is that if you're saying that, in particular with the referendums bill, that it contravenes the Human Rights Act, with the Human Rights Act no longer being
you're correct, Dave. Yeah. It takes you back into timescales.
Yeah.
What I'm watching is very simply is, starting last November, will the Petitions Committee get round to my petition by this November? That's the timescale. And will the Parliament pay any attention? I understand MSPs and government ministers, they're bombarded with stuff from everywhere. Joanna Cherry made reference to that only recently, where she said, I'm flooded with ideas from everyone, but I've got to tell them they're maybe not workable. So I don't expect necessarily Mike Russell to... I would hope maybe someone would say to him, there's this idiot put in a petition that you maybe should pay attention to. Would he? I don't know. But I'm hoping the petition has enough power behind it, not because I've said it, but because Spice have confirmed exactly the point I'm raising. You may have a dodgy Act of Parliament and you maybe have to have a look at it.
Maybe we need to get Mike on and have a wee talk with him about it.
I'm thinking actually an interview with Mike on this, like maybe a half an hour discussion sounds good. What do you think, Mike?
The thing is either wrong or it's right. It's as simple as that. And if people in Parliament are asked to consider it, the idea of moving it from 6 weeks to 8 weeks is just in my... I just laughed when I saw that. I said, what the hell do you think 8 weeks is going to achieve that 6 weeks wouldn't? Section 39 is the very last part of the whole Act. And I'm quite sure after the committee that was looking at it, those experts gave testimony to the whole... There was two committees looking at it. Not one of them raised this point. I just think they think from 2013 Act was the gold standard. So you just weighed your way... Maybe they just get tired by the time they got to Section 39.
But at least we have someone like you, Mike, to do that, to sit down and actually look at it and say, I don't think this is right. And this is where I see the Assembly playing a much, much larger part in making sure that things are right, because that's, we should be the ones that are driving it. By allowing politicians in the civil service to drive this, you've just given a perfect example of how it can go fundamentally wrong Whereas if we were the ones driving it and we'd already said what we'd acquire, then we instruct our government to do that, and then they have to put it back to us and say, okay, you said this is what you wanted. What do you think of this?
The People's Assembly was partly why I raised that specifically. Yep. It's got a specific importance, in my opinion, to what we're trying to achieve in independence when it comes to a referendum. Set yep. that aside. It's back down. Dave knows this. Dave and I have two different ways of looking at what we've been doing with Twaddle Heads. He knows I want to bang on about the people are sovereign, and it's sovereignty yep. that will get us through this.
Yeah.
But everything we do narrows everything down. So if there's 4 million can vote, 2 million maybe are going to vote yes, but we then pass it down to a political party which has got 124,000 in it, plus the other parties coming along. They then have a conference where Chris McElhenney will ask for permission to do something. It'll either be found competent to be discussed, booed off station, and we're suddenly down to how many people are deciding that? Let's say it's 50 people. And I sit there and scratch my head and say, you can't run a country if you keep narrowing it down to the smallest denominator of opinion. You've got to widen it out to everyone.
Yep, absolutely. And I think that's the thing with independence as a whole. And I think, to be honest, this is my honest opinion, but I think in 2014, they got the argument fundamentally wrong. First of all, they allowed the narrative to be set around the economy and around politics, rather than the narrative should be set around, we are a sovereign people, isn't it about time we made our own decisions? Because it really is essentially as simple as that. There's not... And as you say, the yes movement, or the independence movement, as I would say, so the 2 million slightly plus people we have out there that we believe support independence, that are not part of political parties, that are not part of the yes activist group, that are not on Facebook, that are not, none of them are being represented. None of them are getting their voices heard. We don't even know what they think, you know, so to have that assembly to find that out, and for us to be a collective, I do see is, because you're never going to sell SNP politics. It's Marmite that either love or hate, you know, and the same with any other political party. It's not about the political parties. It's about us getting together and deciding how we want the country run. In the same way, it's not SNP v Tory. It's not left versus right. It's not capitalism versus socialism. It's about having a grown-up conversation about how do we want to see our country run. Now, it's not necessarily going to fit into one of those categories. It could just be a, this is how we see it working. But why do we need to stick to these labels? Because by doing that, we're dividing each other. Get rid of all the labels, get the assembly, and just get people's ideas, people's thoughts, people's priorities, people's problems even. You know, I was actually having a think the other day about the assembly could actually have an agony aunt page on it, where people within their local communities have had a problem with their council, or have had a problem with their water supply, or and they could put that on there, and it could help us discover where all the problems are, and then talk about the ways that we could fix it collectively. And once you remove political parties and left and right, you're far more successful speaking about things like that in that way.
It's not me I'm talking about in that video. It's people like, my favourite probably is Indie Truck Davey, right?
Yeah.
When you watch Davey do his broadcast in the morning, he is so much better than any other news broadcaster at giving you news which is focused on how we in Scotland should be thinking and reacting to things. How much am I paying for Davey to do that? Nothing. That is the way you sit down and say, right, is he educating me? My God, is he educating me? That is what should be happening. That's what I'm hoping Dave and I are maybe trying to do with the 12 Heads, is to take a person who's got a point of view and try and draw it so that other people can understand what that point of view is and make their mind up.
So have you guys enjoyed the day? Actually, have you enjoyed your week, your Plan B week? I'd have to say that the Yes groups was fantastic. That was brilliant. You should do that all the time. In fact, that should be a weekly thing, where Yes groups come on and just give their views. Because it's interesting hearing it from all these different groups across the country.
When we put the idea together, we were going to get Chris on, and then just grew arms and legs, because we didn't know what Plan B was either. And I actually put a poll up on Twitter before we did the interview with Chris, saying, OK, what do you think Plan B is? and I gave four different things, and they were all sort of pretty. There wasn't one over 50% of all the votes, and everybody had different ideas. And I realised at the time, I didn't know what it was either. And then Chris gave us a copy of it, and basically it was the third thing on my poll. The majority of seats, I think, will get you a referendum. I don't think it'll get you independence. But as I say, Chris then said, but if people at the conference and they help that, they can amend it. In which case, but if I was in the SNP and sitting at that conference, I would try to amend it to the fact that if you get a popular vote majority, that you declare independence. But if you only get a majority of seats, you go for the advisory referendum. But once again, you're back to the same thing. All independence parties votes must count towards that if you're going for it on a popular vote, in which case somebody needs to take a lead and everybody else has to agree that they're going to follow the word on one policy on their manifestos. And I think that could be done. Because at the end of the day, you don't get to be a politician if you've not got an ego. You have to have a certain ego. Apart from Philippa Whitford, I think she's got to be the least egotistic politician I've ever met, but almost everybody else has one, and they wouldn't be able to be a politician without one. I think it might be quite difficult to draw those strands together, given the fact that some people seem to be more interested in independence than others. And I'm not having a go at parties here, I'm having a go at certain people in a lot of different parties. The soft independence thing is actually worse than unionism.
I mean, I'd agree with you on that. I think it can be done. I think it's possible, but then anything's possible. I'm that type of person. But there has to be a will to want to do it. And I think that's where your problem may come in. And I do think, whilst I wouldn't say I dislike the SNP, of course, I vote SNP. I want my independence at the end of the day. But I think you're now looking at a party that's been in power for 12 years in Scotland, and there's an element of them that doesn't want to lose that power. So that, of course, is where the biggest problem comes in. However, they don't represent as many people as they should if they were serving the needs of that pro-indie movement within Scotland, because they would have engaged so many more people. And I think my issue is on the engagement. I've been involved at branch level as well for a short period of time, I would say. So that gave me a great insight into it. But I think it's just the whole problem with political parties. Should we not just be people representing people? Do we need political parties? I think that's my thing, because as soon as you sign up to a party, you put party before your people. And we've seen this so much even within the Brexit situation. You've seen it so much where you've ended up where the constituents have voted in the opposite way to their MP, their MSP, whoever their elected representative is. But that elected representative still carries on following an agenda that's in complete opposition to their constituents. That shouldn't exist.
You saw that very much in what happened over Brexit.
Yep, exactly.
A cabinet, you know, at Downing Street, where they're meant to say, right, we'll have a discussion, and then that is the government's line. You must agree with it, even if you think it's the most ridiculous thing you've ever heard in your life.
Yeah.
So you had people leaving the cabinet for that reason. You had people crossing the divide in the parliament and leaving the party behind. And that is where you do hit that problem. Warn you, however, Diane, I think how long after the Day of Independence? I think we'll be celebrating for a long time before this breaks out. But you're going to see a massive amount of political parties start up in Scotland. There's going to be arguments galore. I just hope to live long enough to watch it. I don't want to take part in it. I just want to watch it.
Yeah, there is an element of entertainment in it, to be fair, isn't there? Yeah, I mean, there is that argument. We do still need political parties. But in actual fact, and this is where you'll know yourself, Mike, I 100%, and I still do support, in essence, the AFI party, the Max the Yes, yep, that Pat was on speaking about earlier. And I did get involved with some of the work within the steering group. And the reason being is because the whole idea and concept behind the AFI was that the Yes groups got involved, and the Yes groups were the ones that nominated the candidates. So essentially, it was the people within the communities that were able to nominate the people within their regions that they could see had the experience and the passion and the determination to go and fight for their people. So we were, through AFI, there is a huge mechanism to get just indie supporters out there who have done their research, who have worked within their communities, who do prioritise their people, to get out there and to take a stand and go and represent the region, because they're the ones that know what they want. But by doing it on their own, they don't have that party manifesto that they have to follow or subscribe to. And it gives them more freedom to actually represent.
The problem you always have in these things, we think you're in a bubble. The Yes movement's in a bubble. But there's people at the moment who don't know that they're going to have a job tomorrow because of COVID.
Yeah.
There's people who don't know they're going to have be able to pay the mortgage because of Brexit. In their ordinary lives, they will not hear about Alliance for Independence. Getting the message through to people who are not day-to-day involved in politics is why you end up with politicians who come out with catchphrases like take back control, because they know that's it, and repeat it and repeat it and repeat it. It's where the problem comes in with getting independence. We know there has to be a campaign. We know there has to be leaflets going through the door. We know that some of those leaflets are just going to go straight into the bin. That is always the biggest problem of this. It's something we have to address and work our way around. There was a period, if you think back, there was a period where reframing became the topic amongst the bubble, right? We're now into, I have absolutely no doubt, don't ever get me wrong in this, that how the list vote has been undiscussed because of SNP 1 and 2 has been something that we had to address. It's very, very important. If nearly half the MSPs come from the list, and they happen to be a majority of unionists, we're doing something wrong. We've got to think our way through that.
Yeah, of course.
A lot of people there against it. The person I wouldn't ignore, and that's James Kelly. You've got to get, in his way of working things, at least 5 to 6% return to get anywhere with a list MSP. That's why I come back to this common message position. If I knew that I was voting for the SNP, who had laid out a plan, which ISP, AFI, I always called them AFI Good, but AFI or whatever else, the Greens, Solidarity, SSP, were all signed up to the same wording, then it makes it less difficult. People talk about splitting the vote. There are two votes. One is going to go to the SNP. Let's make the other one effective. I don't think we're there yet. That's why I left, because I was going to cause problems with some of my opinions.
Yes. Right? I can vouch for that also.
I may well come back into arguing about it, but I think they've got to launch first. You've got to see. Pat Lee, you did an interview with him. Pat makes a lot of good comments in that. I'm not arguing with that. Wasn't the principle I was in. It was just basically, I thought, you haven't thought all this through. Dave's got his method. I'll bring you back in, Dave, to see how you're doing it. But you've got your method of establishing your working steering committee in your locality. How have you done that?
I can tell you basically what I've done. I've got in contact with people in this area that are activists. The one who gave up his SNP membership to actually do it, who are well respected in the Yes community. And then basically we worked out who was going to invest at what, and then just said, right, okay, right, that. Like, you're in charge of that, you're in charge of that, you're in charge of that. Covering the most important things you have to do. We're talking about people who have bust in supports to get an SNP councillor elected in Pennycook. Cliff is good with actually doing PowerPoint things. So, I mean, as far as that, you can set up meetings day after day after day, the PowerPoints will be the same. It's always the follow. So we're sort of trying to do stuff that way. And gradually we'll spread out and build our network for there. And we're pretty much been given our head by the steering group. It has to be local democracy, or you're just the same as everybody else. And it was basically when I was assured that that's how it was going to work, that's what, when I came back and said, right, okay, I'll do it for you. But I'm only doing it up to September. As I say, basically, I'm coming in to help to try and build the framework. And then in September, they're going to have their conference and they can vote somebody else and do my job. I'll have helped to build it by that time. And because I've got no interest in the politics side of it at all. Independence. I'm not interested in being sitting in Parliament. I'd much rather stand at the side of the road down in Berwick and cause havoc than sit in Parliament and completely bore my tits off.
Dave and Diane, we were asked to continue up to a certain time. We're now approaching that time. Dave, could you and I be gentlemen? Yes. Thank Diane for joining us. Diane, you've done a hell of a lot of work for today's event. I think we should leave you with whatever final words you want to say to everyone.
Can I just say something before she... Of course you can. She's got this absolutely brilliant idea about shining messages on the side of buildings. And I'm quite into that thing as well, and I need to talk to you about it more soon.
Just ping me a message, Dave, anytime. Yeah, lots more. I like all the fun stuff. And one of the things I would say about today is it was fun. But it was a huge learning curve. I only came across the Covenant myself in February sometime. So it was a massive, and I'm a technophobe also. So I have no idea. My hat goes out to the tech team that are behind all of this at the round table in the Covenant, because man alive, they've had a lot of patience with me. And I will have to say a personal thank you to Peter Steele, because he has held my hand so much in getting all this stuff done. I just got involved because I want people to know about all these things that are floating around, and I wanted to learn about it myself. And actually working with you guys in the groups and things is so much fun that I am more than happy to do anything you ask. So yeah, bung ideas my way, I'm more than happy to run around and carry them out for you. But thank you for having me on, and well done on your Plan B week. And I'm looking forward to seeing more from you guys in the future. So thanks.
I think it's going to be a Plan B fortnight by the time we're finished, or maybe a Plan B month.
That's all right. That sounds good to me.
I'm going to say bye-bye.
Yeah, see you later.
Okay, well, we've done 1320 to 1707, so you know what that means.
It means cheers. I'll see you later, guys. And in life,